Well, good morning. I want to welcome you to Hill Country Bible Church. And for those of you who are joining us at our campuses, Steiner Ranch, Brushy Creek, we want to welcome you. Less than 60 days from now, we will be electing the 45th President of the United States. And I don't have to tell you that this is a hotly contested election. Now, here's what's strange about this. Today is actually the 15th year anniversary of 9/11. How many of you have watched one of those specials on some of the 9/11 memorials? I watched the one on Flight 93. It's just phenomenal to think about what happened and the huge response that took place. And you would think that after 15 years that we would be living in a world that would be much more safe than it was 15 years ago, but for those of you who are paying attention to the global scene, it's actually not. It's worse. You would think after 15 years that we as a nation would be more united than we've ever been, but it's probably since the time of Reconstruction and the Civil War, we're probably as divided as we've ever been. In fact, in this particular presidential election, one-third of the people in the U.S. have had a fight with somebody else over who they're going to vote for. One-third of you, okay? And it breaks down in interesting categories. If you're a college graduate, you're 50% more likely to have an argument. And that 50% of the people that are college graduates have had arguments about this. If you're a millennial, 46% of the people that are under 30 have had an argument, a fight, about who's going to be president, okay? Now, 48% of people who describe themselves as liberal have had a fight with someone else over the election. 37% of conservatives, so conservatives, I guess, are a little less contentious or a little less interested, I don't know, a little less passionate, and then 33% of moderates have had a fight. You'd think moderates would be kind of like, let's all get along. No, they're fighting too, like everybody's fighting about this. Well, you say, well, that's only, a third of the people are fighting about this. What about the rest of the people? Well, the rest of you have already settled this because you have no friends. Now, let me finish the sentence. You have no friends who would vote for somebody different than your candidate. You say, really? Yeah, let me prove it. 47% of those who say that they are Clinton supporters say they also have no friends, they know nobody personally as a friend who would vote for Donald Trump. 33% of the people who say they're voting for Donald Trump say they have no friends that they know of that are voting for Hillary Clinton. Like, you guys have unfriended everybody, right? And so it's interesting in this election that the polarization that's taking place, like, I'm not even going to hang out with somebody, be friends with somebody that has a different opinion than me. And some of you say, well, yeah, because this is the most important election in the history of the United States. I went back and Googled that, you know, because I wanted to know how many presidential candidates in the past have said that. You know how many? 100%. This is the election that will determine the fate of the nation, right? Everybody said that, right? So probably it is, just like all the other ones were. To the candidates that are running that are going to get to be president, it is to them. I don't know whether it is or not to us. Some of you guys are going to argue with me about that. So let me just start off with disclaimers. Okay, we're doing a series on In God We Trust, Politics and Culture Without the Personalities. Now, after looking at how divided we are as a people, how contentious everybody is, how angry everybody is, and the state of our situation here, I thought God was leading me to talk about some of the big issues in our culture and avoid the personalities. So let me just make a couple disclaimers. The first thing I want you to know is I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. Some of you are going, why did I get up this morning, you know? Okay, I thought you were going to tell us. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. Second thing I want you to know is that I will say some things that you don't like, because I'm going to say some things that I don't like. It's very emotionally difficult to say things you don't like, but, you know, to hear it, say it. There's a lot of things that we don't like. I'm going to say some things. I'm also going to say some things that you think I'm implying something that I'm not implying. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. What I'm going to ask you to do is don't, like, drop out, don't walk out, and don't start compiling the email in your mind that you're going to write to me as soon as you get a chance. Because if you'll actually listen all the way through to the end, it may open your mind to a different perspective. Too much of our world is centered around trying to isolate everybody from us that thinks differently than we do, and it makes us poorer as a people, okay? So with that disclaimer, let me just start out by being as controversial as I can with my first statement. I'm going to put it up here so you have to read it. I think I'm going to put it up here. There it is. Okay, here's what you need to think about this presidential election. In a democracy, or for those of you who want to be really specific, I actually know that we live in a democratic republic, okay? I know that. You don't have to write me about that. I know that. But in a country where the people get to decide who their representatives are, how's that for technical? In that country, in a democracy, our leaders are a reflection of ourselves. In other words, the people that are running for political office in our country right now, we actually deserve them. And for those of you who are saying, whoa, I just ask you to think deeply about that. Look at the people that are running and why they're able to run and why they're able to get where they are, and ask yourself the question, who have we become? Who have we become? Here's the second, and it's the form of a question. Do we choose fear or faith? When you think about the future of our nation, do you think in terms of, oh my goodness, like this, everything's falling apart, our world is falling apart, or do you choose faith? Do you say, God is actually in charge? He's working in the world, and I'm going to choose faith. If you choose faith, the temperature of your debate goes way down. It doesn't mean you won't hold your convictions, but the temperature goes way down if you're choosing faith. So today, we're going to actually look at a political conversation that was intended to entrap Jesus. As we look at this together from the scriptures and see how Jesus responded, it's going to teach us a lot about how we talk to each other, how we relate to each other, and how we do politics, okay? So that's where we're going to start off this week. And if you've got a Bible, open it to Mark chapter 12. If you don't have a Bible, BibleGateway.org, you can pull that up on your smart technology, or you can get up in all of our venues. You can get up, we got them around the room. You can go get a Bible and look at it and follow along with us. And I'm going to read the passage to us. This happens during the final week of Jesus' life, okay? So Jesus is going to be crucified on Friday. This happens earlier in the week, and all of the various groups that are out to get him are asking him questions, trying to get him to say the wrong thing so that they can bring a charge before the Roman officials to accuse him and get him crucified. So we pick up in verse 13, it says, later they, that would be the ruling council, they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus. Why? To catch him in his words. They came to him and said, Teacher, we know you're a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Now, anytime somebody butters you up that much, before they ask the question, just beware, okay? Now, Jesus is that good, so it was fine to butter him up. You're not, okay? I'm not. But you can see they're kind of setting him up. We know you're going to tell the truth. We know you're going to be impartial. We know you're not going to pull any punches. And here's the question they ask, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we? So that's the question before Jesus. And here's what I want you to see. Jesus is now confronted with what is probably the political controversy of his times. The political controversy of his times. And you say, well, taxes, like everybody asks that question. Let me focus you on what actually is going on in the historical context, okay? So who are the people that are asking him? You've got two groups. You've got the Pharisees on one hand and the Herodians, and they come together and ask him. And these two groups of people could not be more diametrically opposed. Okay, they couldn't be more. From the Pharisee standpoint, they believed that Israel was a theocracy with God as its king, the Old Testament law as its legislature, and the Sanhedrin Council as its judicial branch or its judges, and no Roman government should tell them what to do, particularly a pagan government. And to sell out to Rome was to sell out your faith, your nationality, and this is something to be rejected. On the other side were the Herodians. The Herodians were the supporters of Herod. Herod was the puppet king that Rome had put in place to rule over them, and Herod hated this Jewish stuff. He hated the Old Testament law. He was pagan to his core. And Herod was the one who loved Greek culture and Greek gods, and particularly Greek morality or Greek immorality, however you want to phrase it. And so what they wanted was progress, get along, be part of this Roman Empire, get your money in cosmopolitan ways, working with the system. We actually want to get rid of the old and bring in the new. And so, I mean, if you think about it, if you're asked a political question and the two people that are standing there asking you are Ted Cruz and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, like they're setting you up. Now, some of you guys are saying, well, who are those people? Good thing you don't know, okay? You don't need to know that much. Guess you need to know Ted Cruz. Anyway, that's what was going on here. So these two groups are on two totally different sides of the equation. When they ask the question about the tax, they're not talking about taxes in general. They're talking about one particular tax. And that particular tax was the poll tax or the head tax that was implemented in AD 6. Now, keep in mind, we're around 33 AD or so, so like 26, 27 years before, the Romans had gotten so sick of the Jewish revolts that they came in and they just said, we're going to occupy this place directly. And they brought in Roman soldiers. And when they did that, in order to pay for those Roman soldiers being stationed right there in that area and having a Roman governor being put in that area, what they did was they turned around and they passed on the joyful expenses to the people in the form of a poll tax. In other words, for the privilege of now being under the direct control of Rome, you get to return to Caesar a denarius for each person. When we take the census, or we're going to find out how many you are, and you're going to pay us for the privilege of us having our occupying troops being in your country. Can you imagine that? If someone took over the United States and their forces were stationed here to keep us under control, and you got to pay a tax directly to the king who was in charge of that force that was occupying us. This was a huge, huge political and religious conflict that was taking place. In fact, so much so that there had already been a revolt in 86 surrounding this. In fact, this gets discussed in Acts chapter 5. Some time ago, Theudas appeared claiming to be somebody, and about 400 men rallied to him. He was killed, and all his followers were dispersed, and it all came to nothing. And then after him came Judas the Galilean. Now notice Judas. Judas the Galilean appeared in the days of the census, 86. And he led the band of people in a revolt. He too was killed, and all his followers were scattered. But his followers actually became the political party known as the Zealots, who were the ones committing guerrilla warfare at the time of Jesus, some 26, 27 years later. So this Judas the Galilean had already led a revolt. In fact, when you go back and you read the Jewish historian who writes about the Jewish wars during this time, the Jewish historian said, here's what he said when he pulled together that revolt. He said, taxation is no better than downright slavery. And he had blasted it as being no less than high treason against God. In other words, if you guys pay this poll tax, you are blaspheming your God and you are slaves to Rome. And he led a revolt. And of course, the Romans do what the Romans do. They come in and kill him and kill all the people associated with him. So that's what's still being debated and discussed. They're asking the question, do we pay the poll tax, Jesus, or don't we? Now, here's the trap. Before I give you the trap, let me just say, so in Jesus' day, The issue of the tax was as big as the issues that we're facing in our political discussion today, okay? I mean, and we're going to be talking about some of these during the rest of our series. For immigration, is it amnesty or is it build a wall? Which is it? When it comes to racial issues and law enforcement, is it Black Lives Matter? Is it Blue Lives Matter? Is it All Lives Matter? Which is it? This was as big of an issue as that issue is in our culture today. When it comes to the national debt, do we continue on this trend upwards of $20 trillion with another $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities coming our way? And what would we do? Would we tax people more? Would we cut back on benefits? Like, how would we solve that problem? Military cuts? It's the biggest issues in our day. ISIS, how do we deal with ISIS? Do we try to find a way to culturally connect with people from a different background? Or do we, as some of our politicians said, do we bomb the hell out of them? Like, all these issues that we're facing, and we're going to talk about a number of those over the course of this series, all of those issues that are going on, this was just as big in Jesus' day as all of those are in our day. And so here's the downside. If Jesus says, don't pay the tax to Caesar, he's supporting national sovereignty. He's supporting the worship of God alone and not that pagan Caesar. But he's also become a revolutionary and he's calling for armed revolt and resistance. He's starting a war. If Jesus says, hey, listen, you need to give the money to Caesar, just pay Caesar, then Jesus is now viewed as a compromiser spiritually and religiously, as not supporting national Judaism and as supporting this pagan emperor and this pagan god who thinks he's a god. And everything he's been saying about the kingdom of heaven, he's a fraud. He's a fraud. So either he loses politically and brings Rome down on his head, or he loses spiritually and brings the ire of all the Jews down on his head. You would think, like, how do you answer that question, right? Like, is there a good answer to the question? Which brings us to Jesus' approach. Jesus engages the controversy, but he engages it in a unique way. He engages it by pointing to a better kingdom. He points to a better kingdom, a different way of thinking about the world. Now, I want to give you his answer, and then we're going to spend some time unpacking it, because this is just so profound. They asked the question, verse 14, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? And then notice in verse 15, they say, should we pay or shouldn't we? In other words, this is a yes or no question. Jesus, just answer it. Just give us a yes or no question. Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me? He asked. Bring me a denarius, and I will look and let me look at it. And they brought him the coin, and he asked them, whose portrait is this? And whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then Jesus said to them, give to Caesar's what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. And they were amazed at him. Now, some of you have heard this so many times, you're not really amazed, because it sounds like a really good answer, right? But I want you to understand why they were amazed, okay? I want you to understand why they're amazed. Several things that I want you to see. First of all, is Jesus doesn't spin this. He doesn't dodge the question. He's not afraid to have a political conversation, even about a tough issue. He's not disengaged from politics. I don't know about you, but it drives me crazy to watch an interview where the candidate is asked a direct question and spends the next 5 minutes talking badly about their opponent. But that happens all the time. Cable news programs are filled with paid liars. Now we're going to bring the paid liar on from the Republican Party and the paid liar on from the Democratic Party, and we're going to have a debate. That's a debate? Like, these people get paid for it. They lose their job if they don't represent how their candidate is Jesus and the other candidate is the devil. That's what they get paid to do. And some of you watch that all day long. Okay, Jesus doesn't spin, he doesn't dodge, he answers the question. In addition to that, we see that Jesus also doesn't oversimplify. This is a very short but profound answer to a question. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Here's how we oversimplify. Let me wade into this. 40 million Americans without health insurance. Wow. That's a lot of people. Don't you care about that? So what it seems like is that we would have an honest conversation. Who are those people? Why don't they have health insurance? What would it cost to give them health insurance? How much more would each of us have to pay to do that? What would they be willing to do in lifestyle changes and so forth to be more healthy to cut those costs? And we would have a national conversation about the actual facts. But that's not what we do we? We oversimplify. We say we've got 40 million Americans without health insurance, and we've got a 2,500-page bill here that tells us that everybody can keep their doctor if they want to and keep their medical plan if they want to, and it's going to cut your costs by $2,500 a year. Now, let me see. 40 million uninsured people, and my cost is going to go down? And there's going to be no impact whatsoever on our current system? That seems like an oversimplification, does it not? But somehow we have a tendency to think that all of those people, and the left and the right both do this, that all of those people have magic beans. So they have magic beans someplace that, you know, they can plant these beans and like it'll feed everybody. And all we get is this big giant yelling at us from, you know, up above, right? So later on, we find out that the architect of the bill, who is an MIT professor, which obviously if you're an MIT professor, you've got to be right and righteous, said that they depended on the stupidity of the Americans and the simply oversimplification and the tortured language of the bill to get it passed. And now we've got to live with all these problems so much better. To not take complicated problems and oversimplify them, bring the facts out, and if the people in this country don't care enough, if we're not compassionate enough to help out these people, at least everybody knows it. And if we are compassionate enough to help them, everybody knows what it's going to cost up front. And we make a commitment to do this together. That brings people together. Our political climate is so manipulative. And you have to ask yourself the question, why do people on all sides of the aisle feel like we are so dumb that we can't do anything together? Maybe we're getting what we deserve, okay? Jesus doesn't oversimplify, so he's willing to engage. He doesn't oversimplify. What does Jesus do? Jesus asks for a coin. I love this. Just show me the money, okay? Bring me the money. Watch this. It's really interesting. But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me? He asked, bring me a denarius and let me look at it. They brought the coin and he asked them. Now, here's the question he asked them. So, by the way, when you're engaged in political debate with somebody else, oftentimes asking a question is better than spouting your answers. Just saying, okay? Just think about that a little bit, okay? He says, whose portrait is this and whose inscription? Caesar's, they reply. Now, I want you to see what he had in his hand because we've got these today, okay? This is the Tiberius, who was the Caesar at the time. This is the Tiberius denarius, and here's what he says. Whose inscription is that? Well, it's Tiberius, okay? That's who it is. And what does it say on it, okay? What does it say on it? And if you read it, what we have is Tiberius Augustus Caesar. Caesar means king now. He's of the kingly family. And it goes on to say that he is the son of the divine Augustus. So he's not only the king, but he's also the son of the god. And then on this one, it says Pontiff Maxim. Pontiff, that is the high. Maxim, excuse me, it's the other way around. Priest, that is Maxim, the high priest. So he's not only the king, the son of God, but the high priest of his own religion, which is Caesar worship. And Jesus pulls this out. So you can see the implications of this coin. Whose picture is it, and what claim is he making? And then in response to that, we see Jesus says three things about this. The first one is he says that we actually have more power than we think we do. You have more power than you think you do. You say, well, wait a minute. Like, this guy is, he's the king, he's God, he's the high priest. Here's what Jesus says. He says, give to Caesar that which belongs to Caesar. Now, it's interesting, the wordplay. They ask, do we have to pay? And Jesus is saying, no, actually what you have to do is give. You say, that's semantics. No, it's completely different. Here's the difference. What he's saying here is Caesar only gets what is due him and nothing more. In fact, you give him what is due him out of your free choice. And here's what he's saying. Caesar may imprison the body, but he cannot imprison your mind. Caesar may take your money, but Caesar cannot steal your soul. And by saying this, he's implementing this concept of limited government right from the beginning. Oh, certainly Caesar has the power over life and death, but he doesn't have the power over your eternal soul, over your being, or over your person. And so what he's saying is, listen, listen, you've got freedom here. You're the one who's choosing. You are not obligated to a king. Okay? You're not obligated. You don't owe your soul to a king. The second thing he's saying here is you have civic duties and divine loyalty. You have civic duties, but you also have divine loyalty. You say, well, what do you mean by that? He says Caesar only gets what he deserves. Now let's look at it. This is his coin. It came from his silver treasury. It was minted in his treasury. And he's providing a service to you. You may not like the service, but he's providing a service. So send it back to him. But that's all you have to give him. Nothing more. You've got a civic duty. In every society where people come together and trade and work together, there is some level of social responsibility, and Jesus says, fulfill that. Now, you ask the question, well, what is my civic duty in the United States? If I'm a United States citizen, what is my civic duty? Let me tell you what I think, okay? This is just my opinion. Okay, just my opinion. Let me say this again. This is just my opinion. It's not in the Bible. It's just my opinion, but here's what I think. Okay, let me show you. Here's what I think. Civic duties that we have, first of all, pay the taxes. Pay our taxes. Some of you say, oh, unjust government. I'm not paying my taxes on unjust government. Great. Don't drive on our roads. We paid for those. Don't send your kids to our school. We paid for those. Don't live under the protection of our military. We, the rest of us who paid our taxes, we pay for that stuff, okay? We also pay for a lot of other crazy stuff. You know, studies about reproduction on some kind of bees and like, poof. Okay, we pay for that stuff too. So don't eat our honey. Pay your taxes. Secondly, vote. 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 If you don't vote, you don't exercise what a democratic republic is built on, that all the people would give a voice. You say, well, there's nobody to vote for. I don't care. Vote for the nation. Vote. You got to vote, okay? 57% of the American population, adult population, voted in the last presidential election. 57%. That's all. So for the 43% of you who are sitting in this room that you didn't bother, like you have no reason to ever talk about how our country's doing, positive or negative, you stepped out. So really what I'm challenging every one of you to do is register to vote and do it this week, because you only got a couple more weeks that you have to register before you can vote in the upcoming election. And we've got voter registration cards at our Welcome Center. Stop and get one. You say, you tell me who to vote for? Nope, 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 nope. Just do it, okay? Obey the law. We got laws on the books that help us work together as a society. We need to obey those. I only put a question mark there because if the federal government or state government or civil, any government ask you to directly violate the word of God, ask you to do something that is damaging or immoral to another person, then you can object from that. But those are few and far between. Provide for yourself. You say, what do you mean by that? The whole idea of being a free person is that you don't have somebody else taking care of you. You don't have someone else taking care of you. If you are needing someone else to work, to provide something for you and your family, then you are actually putting yourself in servitude to someone else. It may actually be the political party that is sponsoring the person who's doing that, and both parties are involved in that. But our responsibility, just as a human being, is to make our own way and to curb our expenses to fit within our means. Now, there are some cases where people physically, literally can't work because of some kind of a disability. And in that case, we've got charities, we've got the church, we've got our families to help out. And sometimes the government is part of that. But all of us should strive to pay our own way. Next is be informed. And this is probably the hardest thing up here. Be informed. How do you get informed? Do you realize in the 2012 election, $6 billion was spent to confuse the heck out of you people? If you're looking at political advertisements and believing anything that you see in the billions of dollars that are put forward, man, you're not getting your information in the right place. So you say, where do I get my information from? Well, let me give you a couple sources. First of all, I would start with a party platform. I'm going to give you three P's. Start with a party platform. Go read the party platform. As you're reading the party platform, ask yourself the question, does this agree with my values? And is there any possible way that this could ever get done and paid for? That's a really important question. A lot of promises in that platform. Secondly, I would say read the positions of the candidates. What does this candidate say is their priority when they get elected? And then third, go to the person. Who is the person running? What do we know about their history? What have they done in the past? And would I be able to get behind this person? Don't look at their personalities. Look at what they've done, who they are, how they function. And if you'll do those three things, that will take you a long way down the road to getting informed. In addition to that, we have a ministry here called Engage, and the Engage ministries just encourage people to get involved in civic government. So we're not anti-government here. We just want people to be involved in it in a meaningful way. And we're actually going to offer a course, 3-week course, in how do you get involved in local government? How does that work? And what how does that, state government? How does that work? And federal government? How does it work? And how can you be a positive voice in government? And I think we had some voter registration cards out there for you guys to get on board with. And then let me give the last one here. And this is, I know this is controversial, but I'm going to put it up here, defend and serve. There are times when it requires people to protect the safety of the people in the United States, and that's where our military comes in. Some people make this a lifelong career, but it's certainly a noble thing to be willing to put your life in harm's way to protect the people back home. So I think that this is a basic list that when Jesus says, give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, this is basically, in our setting, what he probably would have been referring to. So again, that's just my opinion. But Jesus goes on and talks about divine loyalty. Now, I don't want you to miss this because this is critical. Jesus says, give to Caesar what belongs to him. That's all. Then he says, but give to God what belongs to him. So what actually belongs to God? Remember, whose image, icon, is stamped on this piece of money? Whose image, icon, is stamped on you? You were made in the image of God. So you belong to him. And what Jesus is saying is that no political connections should ever take your loyalty away from your God. He deserves every breath. He deserves your life, your character, your choices. And your whole life is about being connected to him and letting his life live through you. And so it's not unimportant what happens in the civil world, our civil government, but what's mostly important is connecting with our God. That's what should dominate the agenda of our thinking, not simply who's going to win the next election. And then he says this, Jesus is not about simply building a better USA. I know we are, but Jesus is not simply about building a better USA. He's talking about a different kingdom entirely. Now, again, I don't want you to miss this. Jesus asked them for something. Why? Because he didn't have one. He says, can you give me a denarius, day's wages, so we can look at it? Tim Keller, pastor of Redeemer Church in Manhattan, says, Jesus is a king without a quarter. Now think about this. We've got a contrast. We've got Tiberius Caesar who says, I'm the king. It's printed on my money. I'm the son of divinity. I'm the son of God. It's printed on my money. I am the high priest. Jesus says, I am the king. I am the son of God. I am the high priest. This king has power. This king has money. This king can make slaves of all humanity. It's all about him and his glory. King Jesus, it's not about his election, it's about his execution. Jesus' fame and glory does not come from his riches and his power and his enslavement of other humans. Jesus is all about his service. And Jesus, this very week, is going to, out of his obedience to God and his love for people, he's going to lay down his life and die to pay for the sins and the crimes of humanity. Everything that you've ever done, he came to serve you, to bring you into a relationship with the God of the universe, to bring you into a place where you could have forgiveness and freedom and hope, to prepare a coming kingdom for you to be part of. We're not talking about a better kingdom. We're talking about an entirely different kingdom altogether. The king without a quarter. Now, we're talking about something that's good. It's righteous. It's just. It's compassionate. It's merciful. It's truthful. It's honest. And the people listened to his answer and they were amazed. Whoa. Jesus, you're so above Caesar. And here's what I wonder. What if you had that Jesus and all that he brings guiding your life, empowering your day, speaking through your lips, changing your life? How would you be different? How would your conversations go this week when you discuss the political things going on around and you said, but you know what, I'm not worried because actually I'm the person who's committed to the candidate without a quarter. What are you talking about? Well, you see, Jesus is changing my life. He's changing our world. And that's where I really believe we have hope. How would that change those conversations? Do you have hope based on who's going to get elected or based on God in you, living through you in his son, Jesus Christ? Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, I just thank you that you didn't show up here to fix the world with an army, but you started at the very foundation with your own son. Thank you for showing us what hope really looks like so that we may understand that the kingdoms of this world are temporary, but the kingdom of your Son is eternal. And Father, each of us can have that kingdom expressed in our hearts today, in our lives today. So Father, I pray for the person that has never trusted in you, never put their hope in you, that today they would put their hope in Jesus Christ. Find peace. May we not live in fear, but may we walk in faith because of you, Jesus.